Sometimes when you do too good a job, you get punished for it.
Story of my life.
No good deed goes unpunished.
That's exactly what it is. No good deed goes unpunished.
Yep.
Oh, it's definitely the absolute truth with your professional life, because once you get a job where you excel and other people don't, they get away with shit. And if you try to do what they do, that you get called to the carpet on it.
Yep.
That's the wise move. Teresa, learn from us. Slack off as much as possible.
Back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of Back to the Bins. I am David A. Pascarella, and we are joined here tonight for a very special episode where we are going to once again jump back into that wonderful show from the early 2000s, Justice League. And joining us tonight is the producer himself, Mr. Paul Spataro.
Are we covering Justice League, Mr. Pescarilla?
We are. Did you bring your Bernmoose? Also joining Hello, us is one of the co-founders of this most prestigious network.
Oh, don't blame that shit on me. Come on now.
Mr. Scott. H, how are we going to get through this one, Gardner?
Hello. How's it going?
And our very special guest from the free state of Florida. And
God bless.
People who tell you, you know, who you know doesn't get you anything is wrong. Miss Teresa A. Pascarella.
How are we doing, guys? How are we doing?
Welcome.
And we're doing better because you are joining us.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That is quite a sack of BS, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm thinking about. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know what's interesting? When this episode, like, aired and came out, I was, like, 1.5.
Makes you feel old, doesn't it, guys?
That's kind of what I was
guys?
Thinking about. I was thinking about when Dave and I first met up at New York Comic Con, and you were with him, and you were probably 12,
like 12
maybe about yeah. that. So you were just like a little kid, and now you're like a grown-up. You're almost as old as us now.
Oh, God. And the years have been not kind. The Lord, it's only downhill.
Well, they've been kinder to you than they have to us, so don't worry about it.
One day, all this could be partially yours.
Well, what a...
Yeah, we can't leave you anything in our wills, but we are leaving you the keys to Back to the Bins.
Thank God. At least I get that. Oh, my gosh. You know, I was telling someone I was, like, doing this the other day, and they thought it was, like, the coolest thing ever. They're like, no way, like, you're going to be on the podcast? I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm doing, like, you know, like, you ever see, like, you know, like, the Justice League animated series? They're like, yeah. I was like, yeah, like, we're doing, like, an episode, like, episode arc, like, I don't know if you know, like, the star-crossed. I don't know if you know, but, like, we're doing, like, this arc, blah, blah, blah. You're like, that is the coolest thing. Like, where can I find this podcast? Like, is it on Spotify? Is it on YouTube? Like, what's it called? And blah, blah, blah. Like, where can I hear it? Listen to this. It's like,
we do need to get ourselves onto YouTube at some point.
Yes, we do.
Yes, well, that's what we're all the hip cats
on. Everything's on Spotify. Are you on Spotify?
We're on Spotify.
Yes, we are. YouTube, yeah. YouTube will be good.
That would be something, us on YouTube. It would be a much safer bet when we're all retired. Then we can really tell the people what we think.
We need to get 8 masks or something if we're going to be on YouTube. Nixon masks or something.
Speaking of YouTube, do you guys know who like Mr. Beast is?
I've heard of him. That.
Okay. So he was like one of like the few people who you could say like pioneered like YouTube, became like multi-bazillionaire like because of like YouTube videos. He has like a show, he has like a candy brand. He's like known for like walking the streets and being like, oh, like if you like going up to people, like if you follow me on Instagram, like I'll give you like $1,000 right now in cash, like crazy, like does these crazy things on YouTube, right? So apparently he came to the Jungle Cruise like 2-3 days ago, and apparently he was a big jackass on the boat.
Surprise, like, surprise.
No, yeah, like literally.
Celebrity jackass. There you go.
But like asking to drive the boat and like speaking to the microphone and like doing like, and of course it's like a private cruise too, because they're like considered like high security or like whatever. So like it's just like that him and like whoever else he had in his party, like the skipper, like, oh god, I thank god I wasn't there. I couldn't put up with that. Like, fuck with him. This is my boat. Yeah, anyways, let's get on YouTube, guys.
We're just waiting for the podcast money to roll in.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, since, how many years does that take?
With our luck, it's after you're dead, it becomes more valuable, you know. When we get the syndication contract.
I do have videos of us. So when we record it, I also get the video.
Right.
So we can always back up episodes on YouTube if we wanted to.
Yeah, like that's a problem. Like, yeah, like people, there are podcasters who like upload like the video like footage of like this like on YouTube, and, like people watch it.
You know, technically, Scott, you're in reruns now. So is the rerun money good?
Yeah, the syndication money.
Syndication, yeah, you know.
I wish.
That's where Jackie Gleason made his money, apparently.
Right. Well, that's what that's how Star Trek got popular. Syndication. But you know, I like the YouTube idea. I've been thinking a lot about that actually. That might be the way to go. Because I wonder how, you know, audio pod, because everything seems to have gone to YouTube. You know, so many of the popular podcasts and stuff. I don't know that the audio podcast is really that big of a thing anymore, is it? I guess
I think
who you are.
A lot of people like, so for me, like in my generation, like I know there's like people who like listen to podcasts like on Spotify when they're like driving in the car and like stuff like that. But there are, like, a huge chunk of us, like, not really me, but, like, my friends, like, who watch podcasts, like, on YouTube or, like, they'll put it on their TV and, like actually watch, especially when there's, like, a guest star, like, they'll actually watch it.
Right.
So, like, there's, like, also that. Like, I think YouTube is, like, a lot of people, like, they do it.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's people who just play the YouTube and listen to it if they're doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People do it all the time, too. I know there's a way, like, on Spotify, like, certain podcasts, like, it shows, like, it has, like, the video. Like, it, like, has, like, the video that would be on YouTube, but, like, on Spotify.
I guess the big thing for me that's always held me back is, you know, not wanting to have to deal with video editing. But I wonder, you know, if we could get away with just putting the raws up there. The only problem with that is then you got to watch what you say, you know, because if you're yeah, putting it up completely edit free, then, you know, you can't talk shit about people, and you want to be more careful about, you know, tangents and, you know, just anything
if
that
I
you
can't
don't
talk shit about people. Why am I talking at all?
You know, right, you used the word gun, and it's a problem. Something along those lines.
Right, right.
It also depends on your audience, though. Like, obviously, like it's different. Like, we're all like, you know, we all have like jobs right now. Like, but if you're like retired, like, you know, who cares? Like. Who's gonna fire you? Who's gonna like?
Well, it's not that. It's not the firing. Is they'll take the channel down and right. stuff like that.
Right.
That's
not. I mean, there are like there. You don't have to be as sensitive as you think you do, but like obviously there's certain things you, like people are gonna like cancel you over and then like whatever. But like, you know, like ever watch Candace Owens? She says some crazy stuff. And she's up and running.
Right.
Fire me, baby. Fire me.
Please, God, fire me.
Then we'll have to make sure we comb my hair before we come on.
ten amounts.
Maybe we could all get fedoras, you know? And make it like an old time.
I got mine in the top of the closet. I'm ready.
Paul, you just need one and we're all set.
I have a fedora.
We could be like the guy in the opening of what the heck is the movie? The Day the Earth Stood Still. Shall we jump into this?
Yep.
Sure.
All righty. I'm going to take the first episode here. I have a nice synopsis that I stole off the internet.
Nice.
Star-Crossed Part 1. I think it just needs to be said. This is really one of the first animated things that follow the almost the continuity of the previous shows. You know, before we got to this point, cartoons really didn't have story arcs and storylines until this DC animated universe came along.
Really?
And this is all building on stuff that came before. So here we are, episode 1, Star-Crossed. The Justice League is staking out a conference of world leaders. Based on a tip Batman received that a terrorist incident may occur. Superman, as Clark Kent, is watching the conference from inside, among the press corps. Outside, John Stewart steals a few seconds to flirt with Hawk Girl. Suddenly, a greater menace appears in the sky. An alien battleship opens fire. None of the U.S.'s military weapons can hurt it. The League attempts to counterattack, but even they are no match for the battleship's weapons. As the League regroups, an even larger alien battleship appears and downs the attacking aircraft. Hawk Girl recognizes the victorious ship as one of her peoples, the Thanagarians. The ship commander, Harl Talek, asks to meet with Earth's leaders. He reveals that Hawk Girl has been lying to her teammates all along. She did not arrive on Earth by accident, nor is she a law enforcement officer. Actually, she is a lieutenant in the Thanagarian military and was sent to Earth as an advanced scout and somewhat of an ambassador to prepare for their arrival. Talek explains that for decades, Thanagar has been at war with the vicious alien race, the Gordanians, who have targeted Earth for an invasion. Talek offers to aid Earth with the full might of his army. John confronts Hawk Girl, asking what else she's kept secret. Before she can answer, Talek appears and kisses her in front of John. Uncomfortably, she admits that she and Talek are engaged. John is heartbroken by the turn of events, but ever the Marine, he keeps a professional demeanor and doesn't react viscerally. Moments later, while Superman and Wonder Woman are speaking with the world leaders, Batman finds John and offers a word of consolation. Stewart tries to avoid the subject and starts to leave. But John Jones appears and also tries to console him, knowing he knows how hard it is for two people who are so involved. The Flash, however, interrupts them, and much to his surprise and disbelief, discovers Green Lantern and Hawk Girl's relationship. Jones then tries to make them see Hawk Girl's point of view on the situation. John asks John Jones why he never read Shiera's mind, to which John replies that he could never could, and further reveals that he can't read any of the Thanagarian's minds, much to Batman's suspicion. I find it a little more concerning that he was reading anybody's mind. But what do I know? Having seen the power of the Gordanian ship, Earth's leaders feel they have little choice and accept the Thanagarian offer. Immediately, the Thanagarians begin constructing a massive generator with the League's help in the Gobi Desert, which they say will provide a defense shield. Batman, ever suspicious of their sudden circumstances, examines the remains of the dead Gordanian. He finds that all the Gordanians were dead long before the ship appeared on Earth, meaning the attack was a ruse to gain Earth's trust. Talik likely has a secret agenda, so Batman sneaks on board the Thanagarian mothership, disguised as a delegate, before diverting away from the main group and entering the command center. There he overhears a communication between Talik and the leaders of the High Council on Thanagar that the Gordanians are closing in on the Thanagarian homeworld and actually nowhere near Earth. Craiga finds Batman, and after a brief tussle, some Thanagarian soldiers arrive and subdue Batman. Batman manages, however, to inform Wonder Woman of what's going on. Diana contacts Superman to warn him, but the Watchtower is suddenly under attack, having been infiltrated through the landing bay, as the invaders had the access codes. Wonder Woman is soon defeated. In the Gobi Desert, the Thanagarians officially turn on the Justice League, destroying the Javelin. Hawkgirl sees them firing on them and stops them. A nearby construction worker warns General Wells, who then orders an attack. Unfortunately, the Thanagarians disable their missiles, tanks, and rifles with no problem. Superman, Flash, John Jones, and Green Lantern battle the Thanagarians, who defeat all except Green Lantern. Parn Dull shocks John into unconsciousness. Superman is down by a kryptonite energy beam, and the Flash is hit with a gravity beam, which severely weakens him. Green Lantern tries to fly away with his teammates, but Craiga seals them within a force field. John tries to fight his way free, but Hawkgirl shows up, tricking him into lowering his power ring, then knocks him out with her mace and takes his ring. The last thing John sees before losing consciousness is Shiera triumphantly side by side with Talik. The Thanagarian unit takes control of the Watchtower while the rest of their forces occupy Earth. Who would like to jump in first?
Go ahead. Teresa's jumping in.
I feel like the first episode, like, what was interesting to me is that after, like, you know, like, it's explained that Hawk Girl was basically a spy on behalf of the Thanagarians, right? I said that right. Once, like, that's explained, right, and it's explained to, like, the government, so, like, wouldn't in real life, reality, wouldn't the government also, like, kind of be, like, suspicious of, like, the rest of the Justice League now, like, after that, like, off the bat, like, if it's come out that she's been, like, part of the Justice League this whole time, and now she's a spy working with, like, obviously this other, like, her people, like, wouldn't, like, you just become suspicious and less, like, trustworthy of the Justice League and, like, this whole thing? Like, it feels like the government was very responsive to letting, you know, this new race of like aliens come in and explain that, oh, like you're going to be, you're going to be taken over almost, or like attacked by like the Gordanians, right? Am I saying that right? And like, we're here to help and you're going to listen to us. And the government's like, cool, sounds great. That is just so unrealistic to me. And like, obviously, like, it, like, you, the Justice League basically hops on board too, besides like Batman. Batman's like the only really smart one, to be honest, like, kind of like suspicious of everything that's going on. Like, Batman's literally the only one who is like suspicious of what, like, you know, it's so just. That's just an interesting, like, dynamic that, like, came to watching the first episode. Like, why is everyone so, like, willing to just, oh, yep, let's let them help. Let's let them do it. We're going to do this. We're going to build what they say. Sounds great. There was no, like, investigation, which I just thought was interesting.
But I don't think they trusted them right up front, as demonstrated by, because they were watching and they were ready. You know what I mean? When they attack the Justice League, you know, the army is ready to roll in with tanks.
But just as an aside, I keep watching the video and Scott keeps inappropriately grabbing Wonder Woman. I don't know if anybody else here has noticed that.
He has good taste, Scott.
And then I thought it was also interesting how Hawk Girl, she's kind of like a hoe, because she's like in, she, like, she is though, because she's supposed to, she's apparently engaged, and then she's using like her like feminine sexual prowess or like whatever to like seduce John, and it's just like, girl, what are you doing? Like, that's just like, that's a crazy like character like arc that we have going on and like this episode, like this episode arc, like why is that like a plot point, low-key, that she's in love with John but she's actually, oops, she's engaged, surprise, and then John's like, what the heck, like what? And then she's like, yep, like sorry, like I know, like I said I love you, but like I'm actually like, we're done, like that's crazy. That, so I just thought that was crazy too, that she's kind of a hoe. Yeah. In the episode.
Just to go to your earlier point a little bit, I do think that in DC, even more so than in Marvel, in the comics, early on, the heroes were trusted no matter what they did. So that kind of goes to what you were saying. And then at some point, somebody had the bright idea, let's make it so that we don't trust them because they're so powerful. And they went like 180 degrees and changed everything. Yeah. Oh, we need ways of putting down Superman if we can, and doing all of these things. I like to see at least some middle ground where some people actually do totally trust them and some people don't.
Yeah.
I think that's a more realistic take on things. Here, I do think maybe they're a little too quick to just trust. But it's an interesting thing to watch this show. I saw this in retrospect. I didn't watch Justice League of America when it was first coming out, or Justice League rather. I saw when it became when it expanded, the Justice League
Unlimited.
Unlimited. Yeah, I had started watching with that. So this was already in the rearview mirror when I started watching, and when I finally did get around to seeing all of these, I had already kind of gotten a little taste when they would refer back to it. So it was interesting when I first watched it to see kind of the whole progression where they find out that she's there to spy on them and how it ended. And, you know, we're going to get into episodes 2 and 3 as we go on. But for now, I thought it was a very, very bold step that they took in this series. And from the way I understand it, is each season that they did, which they only did 2 seasons of this before they went to Unlimited, but at the end of each season, they weren't sure that they were coming back at all. So this could have been the finale of the series totally when they did it. And I think, like I said, I think it was a pretty bold choice to go with the storyline they did. And I really just, you know, I think if I was watching it live as it came out, I would really probably have been on the edge of my seat, which is saying something for an animated series in that era. Because I think they hadn't hit really the sophistication that this show got very, you know, very often up until this point. You had your cartoons that were really like not for kids at all. And then you have the cartoons that were totally for kids. And this is, you know, we've talked a little bit of late about all ages stuff. And I think this series really is, for the most part, all ages. I think very young kids wouldn't, you know, might be lost a little bit on what's going on. But I think, and, you know, kids over 6, 7, 8 years old, up until adulthood, I think this is written for everybody in there. And I think it's really well done. And I enjoyed the whole aspect of it. And I liked the way Hawkgirl is shown as being kind of torn. She's mm-hmm. an agent for these people, and she has her duty to them. But she's also found her alliance with the Justice League and fallen in love with John. And, you know, there's a whole layer of emotion that you don't normally see in an animated show, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, Scott, I mean, when people are listening to the show, they can't hear you nodding.
No, I was just agreeing with what you said. I was thinking back to, you know, I did watch this live, you know, as it was coming out, I should say. And I remember watching this with my oldest boy, Scotty, because we were watching like Superman, the animated series together, you know, when he was really little and all. But this one, if I remember properly, I think I was keeping a little more eye with this because this did strike me as a little more adult series, especially as it went on. Because some of the storylines further down the road get a little dark, you know, get a little adult. And it always had a greater, you know, level of violence than, say, something like Superman the Animated Series had as well. You know, the stakes were bigger, that sort of thing. So, you know, this one, you know, to my mind, did require a little bit more parental guidance, so to speak, than what preceded it, I think. That also makes it, you know, more exciting and more accessible, but it kind of starts moving it away from all ages as well. I don't remember if they had the TV rating system yet when this was airing or not. If they did, I'd be curious what it was when it was airing, or even if it's, you know, been rated, you know, retrospectively, you know, and the streaming services or what, because I didn't watch it that way. I wanted to talk about that, about, you know, the different formats that are out there as far as, you know, physical media anyway. I actually own this two different ways. I own it as part of the box set of Justice League. I have it on DVD. I think it's now been released on Blu-ray, I think.
It is. I have it on Blu-ray.
Oh, okay. That, you know, the DVD, and I assume the Blu-rays are probably the same thing, are interesting because, you know, they are the episodic episodes, and at least in the set I have, part three has a commentary. So the, you know, the DVD extras, so to speak, are kind of nice because there's a lot of bonus stuff as far as commentaries and stuff. But the way I rewatched it for this recording is, I actually have it as a movie. I don't know if you guys can see this. It was
released
as a one-shot, you know, one-shot DVD where all three episodes are edited together as a movie, and it's actually billed on the cover of it as Star-Crossed the Movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched it that way as a feature-length movie rather than the, you know, the original three episodes it aired at. And I tell you, it played really, really well like that. This was so much better than I remembered it because, I mean, I love, you know, the whole DC animated universe to begin with. I really liked Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, but, you know, like anybody, I had my favorite episodes, and then I had the episodes I didn't really care for. And this one in my memory had not been living a good life. I remembered this as kind of a boring one that was mostly about Hawkgirl and Green Lantern falling out and, you know, her being revealed as a traitor. And that's all I really remembered. I didn't remember it as a really good actioner. And it's got some great action in it. Everybody gets a moment. I was really happy rewatching this. It's really, really good. I only have just, you know, the minorest of quibbles with it. Also, with it being, you know, the movie release of this has, it doesn't have a commentary on it, but it did have some deleted scenes and it had some interviews with the creators, which was interesting. I thought it was really neat that because they re-edited it to be a movie, it has a different opener as a movie. They had created a new opening sequence that actually has credits for each of the characters. So it, you know, unlike the episodic episodes where they just flash all the voice credits real quick at the very end and you got to freeze frame it to catch everything, everybody in the opener in the movie version actually gets, you know, their credit due, which was kind of neat. They also redid the music, and I found the music was a little slow and didn't really fit the tone of the opener, but it was just interesting that they, you know, they took the time to actually compose new music for it and everything. The rest of my notes I'm going to kind of save because, like I said, I watched it as a movie. I'll save the rest of my notes for when we actually get through all three parts. Cause I'm kind of treating it as a movie, as opposed to, you know, the episodic nature of the originals.
I'll throw a few more points out. I like the detail they use in this where they really use the seal of the president, you know, at the conference they're having at the beginning. It's cool to see Clark, you know, as Clark,
yeah,
getting into an argument with Lois that she got stuck with the sanitation strike. The fighter planes, when they attacked the quote unquote Gordanian ship, if you look at their radar system in the cockpit of the plane, to me, it looks just like the Star Wars arcade game. You know, where it was like that 3D, you could almost hear, you know, the Force will be with you always. let's see.
Do we know the exact timeline? Like, it is so, like, from the moment, like, Hawkgirl joined the Justice League to, like, when the Thanagarians came and, like, tried to, like,
like how many years in between?
She says she's been operating on Earth for 5 years at some point in the episode. Because when she initially said that, I thought, is this the fifth season of Justice League? Did they have? And then I was like, no, that's not right. Because it's all retrospective. Because when they all meet up in Secret Origin, the first three episode arc of Justice League, everybody... They might be meeting each, some of them may be meeting each other for the first time, but they've all been operating for some time.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they're all established heroes. Yeah. I can't remember off the top of my head. I can't remember which ones already knew each other and which ones hadn't.
Well, I'm sure like the big, like I call them the big three. I'm sure they all knew each other. Batman probably knew everyone. Batman and Clark and Diana probably were at least.
No, because. Wonder Woman, this is when she arrives, isn't it?
That's, yeah, you're right. Yeah, Wonder Woman was new to the game, but the other ones, geez, now I need to go back and rewatch that. Because, of course, Superman and the Flash had met before, assuming that the Flash in Speed Demons is the same Flash, which I think he's meant to be. So they knew each other.
Well, there's also a huge episode arc revolving around like the Martian Manhunter, like that's a whole
right.
All right, I suggest we just pause for a moment, and we go back and we watch the entire DC animated universe and then come back here.
Well, it's funny that you joke about that because Logan and I, you know, my other son Logan and I, we've been on a rewatch of this series, but it's been like. You know, we'll watch one every couple weeks, couple months type of thing. So we're very early. I don't even think we're halfway through the first season. it's just been one of those like, hey, you feel like a Justice League now? Okay, we'll watch one. And then it might be, you know, weeks or months later before we watch another. But watching this again lit a fire. Like, I really want to step that up and rewatch this whole series now, because it was like, man, was this good. Mm-hmm. I can't believe how much I'd forgotten, you know?
It is good. And like, what's the, I guess Unlimited is the one where it's like, it brings in like the other characters, like Adam and like all like
that. Some really obscure ones, which is cool. Yeah.
Like really crazy.
Watching that as it was unfolding was awesome, because each episode you just didn't know who they were going to pull in. And as a DC first guy, you know, mm-hmm. you know, just a big DC fan, some of the things they did, it was just, I mean, it would bring tears to my eyes. Like, oh my God, I never think, you know, I never thought I'd see this character, you know, on the big or small screen. And, you know, mm-hmm. here they're, you know, guys like, you know, Shining Knight, you know, to see them. Yeah. It was just awesome.
Well, the movies, like me and Dad, we've been trying to watch like all like the DC, like animated universe movies. Those are crazy good. Like if DC could just get it right on like the big screen, like, cause the animated stuff is just fabulous. It really is.
Oh, I've been saying that for years. You know, I mean, I don't understand. I mean, we're getting far afield here, but I've never understood how, you know, the prior iteration of the DC live action movies, how they could get them so colossally wrong when they have this as a blueprint.
Yeah, that's true. Like it's right there. It's already been done for you. Just do it.
Now explain to me. How come the Lanterns don't know anything about this? You would think the Guardians of the Universe, they would know about the Thanagarians and the Gordanians.
But I think you explain it by just playing on their arrogance, that things are happening under their noses because they're overly arrogant, that they think they have everything under control, and that the, you know, the Hawk people have been doing things behind their backs that they didn't even notice it because they were too arrogant about it.
Did you get a vibe? Did you get a vibe of the Klingon Council, the High Council with the Thanagarian leadership?
Yes, definitely. I got some Klingon feel from just even some of the Thanagarian soldiers.
Batman in his disguise. Did he not remind you of Alfred from the
old TV?
He was absolutely supposed to be
Batman in like an Alfred costume. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's the original Batman 66 Alfred, not the DC animated Alfred.
Right. Yeah.
Alan Napier, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's it. I was trying to think of his name. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I like they brought back General Wells, who is in the first episode of Secret Origins, where he's the one leading the tanks against the Martians.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Why do you think, Dad, why do you think they didn't go to DEF CON 3?
See, that was what was missing from this.
I know. That's what...
Teresa have a thing about DEF CON 3 where we went to see which one was it?
It was Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past. How old were you, maybe?
I had probably like 14, maybe around that time.
When they were attacking the White House, I turned to Teresa. I go, what do you think they should do about it? Now she goes, go to DEF CON 3. And that second in the movie, after she said it, the guy in the movie goes, take us to DEF CON 3.
We both looked at each other like, he said it.
Do we have anything else on the first episode?
I don't really think so. I mean, on my end.
I got one more note. when they show the Gordanians crushing the skull, Terminator.
Right.
Oh yeah. Who's doing part two?
You want me to read it? Okay.
All right.
I feel like I'm in like school. Like, oh God, the teacher's calling me to read the chapter.
All right. Who's that who didn't put her hand up? Miss Pescarella, please read it.
Okay. Let me take a sip of my water. All right. The League is taken prisoner and are to be transported to a holding facility aboard a prison shuttle, each specially restrained in a cell according to Hawkgirl's info. Superman, bathed in red sun radiation, Jean in a stasis field to nullify his powers, Flash in a heavy gravity field, and Wonder Woman's torso lashed to a rectangular pillar with her own golden lasso. John and Batman's hands and wrists are encased in a restraint handcuff style, but Batman's are notably held behind his back. After Talca warns Earth that the Thanagarians are occupying the planet and the Justice League is in custody, he commends Hawkgirl on a job well done. He has his subordinate, Krager, show her to the League aboard the shuttle when she asks about them. Krager is suspicious about her sympathies with the League and the humans and suggests Shiera kill them, but she says this would cause a planet-wide revolt. The whole point is to build the shield and leave. She orders that the prisoners be properly cared for. Hawkgirl watches the shuttle take off for its destination. A guard delivers prison food to Diana, who goads him into assisting her in eating it as her arms are tied and reminding him of Hawkgirl's orders. He holds out a piece speared on his dagger. She bites his hand, snatching the dagger in her teeth. He charges, but she grabs him in a crushing leg lock and headbutts him out cold. The thrown dagger hits the wall panel button for the pillar and retracts it. She rushes out as the alarm is raised. Batman has her open his cell, and the Amazon warrior battles the guards as he frees the others. Batman downs a guard by Flash's cell, and once released, Flash finds the guard's keys and unlocks Batman's wrist. Batman and Flash help the weakened Superman and Jean respectively out of their cells, and once they pick up fallen weapons, to even the odds, on Batman's suggestion, Flash frees John, who uses his restraint as a convenient bludgeon. A newly arrived guard tries to shoot Diana with a powerful rifle, but is struck with Superman's thrown weapon, and the misfire carves a destructive gash through the shuttle's hull. Having recovered enough strength to fly, Superman takes Batman and grabs Flash while Diana takes Sean and Lantern, and they escape through the breach above Metropolis. The shuttle crash lands in the harbor. The League elude the Thanagarians patrolling the city searching for them. They decide to stay hidden, and finding themselves in a department store, they discard their costumes and don civilian clothes. Flash protests for secret identity reasons, but Batman cuts him off, reveling that he, always the detective, already found out Flash's alter ego as Wally West and unmasked both Superman and himself. Jean, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern do not have secret identities. The League split into pairs, and on Bruce's suggestion, head for Gotham City, 30 miles to the rendezvous point at Wayne Manor. Thanagarians figure out they have disguised themselves as civilians and hold checkpoints for city-to-city travel. A confrontation between some young men and Thanagarian soldiers incidentally endangers a couple in front of Bruce and Diana, and she is forced to fly in order to save them. Exposed, she uses her strength to delay pursuers, recognizing they are Leaguers. An East Indian restaurant owner assists Bruce and Diana. They are quickly ushered into his restaurant, disguised as a pair of lovers having an intimate meal by sharing a passionate kiss. The owner tells the Thanagarians nobody has entered recently. Most of the other diners match their basic description and that the lovebirds have been there for hours. So they leave. Bruce and Diana thank the owner after he escorts them to his delivery entrance through the kitchen. At the train station, Wally and John are in line to board a train. Wally admits his surprise that Batman is Bruce Wayne, while John is surprised at how quickly the Phantom variants have taken over Earth. Wally tries to comfort John, pointing out it isn't his fault for what's happened, as Hawkgirl fooled everyone. However, John reveals he doesn't blame himself but Hawkgirl for everything that's happened, but admits he blames himself for caring about her. They soon spot that there's a checkpoint at the head of the line. While it's not clear if Wally has his wallet on him, John is publicly known. They'll be exposed if they stay, but if they run, they'll draw too much attention. Clark and John arrive in time to see the problem. John points out if they help them, the civilians could get hurt, but Clark has an alternative. Just as it's Wally and John's turn, John prepares himself to attack until Clark appears and pretends to try and get an interview, with John posing as his photographer, to distract the Thanagarian guard while Wally and John slip aboard the train undetected. Aboard the mothership, Hero reveals the Thanagarian's true plan. The force field generator is actually a hyperspace bypass generator, the last in a series of wormhole relays that will allow the Thanagarians to bypass the Wardanian's defenses and attack their homeworld directly, finally ending the war. Hawkgirl points out that Earth will be destroyed in the process, but Taloc and the others, it is a sad but necessary sacrifice. Hawkgirl is horrified and tries to convince Taloc to build it on a desolate planet or moon. He says that it will throw off their calculations for more than 5 years. He tells her that their obligation is to Thanagar and reminds her of the scars he received from years in the Gordanian prison camp. She hasn't forgotten, of course, but protests that a war is no excuse to destroy an innocent world. He angrily cuts her off and demands that she obey as her superior officer, to which she says that she doesn't even know him anymore. Cracker interrupts, reporting that they've lost the league, and then smiling at Shiera, suggesting she would know where they are. She angrily slams him against the console by the neck, warns him to tread lightly around her if he wants to go home, and then leaves. But Cracker again smiles, and that's the time that she didn't really answer the question. Later, Wally and John arrive at Wayne Manor and meet Alfred Pennyworth, who leads them to the Batcave, as everyone else is present. The rest of the league bring John and Wally up to speed. They are trying to figure out why the Thanagarians are really on Earth. Clark points out it's obvious not to protect them, but Wonder Woman is confused. If Earth isn't in any danger, why are they building the force field? Bruce mentions it might not be a force field, and John begins wondering what they are really building. Suddenly, much to everyone's surprise, Hawkgirl reveals herself and admits she can tell them the Thanagarian plans. Everyone is furious and almost get ready to attack her until Hawkgirl says she only came to help. Wally points out that she hasn't been helping considering everything that's happened, but Hawkgirl explains that the Thanagarians are really building a hyperspace bypass which will destroy the entire planet and gives Bruce the data on the project while also revealing she didn't know any of their true plans. Bruce accepts the information, then coldly orders her out. Everyone then turns their backs, leaving only Hawkgirl and John together. She asks John, why isn't he leaving? He replies that the last time he let his guard down, she sucker punched him. Hawkgirl reveals it wasn't personal, but John doesn't believe her. Hawkgirl only admits she did what she thought was right then, just as she feels that warning them is the right thing to do now, and returns his power ring. Hawkgirl then flies out of the Batcave. Unfortunately, Cracker has planted a bug on Shiera, allowing him to track her to the League's hideout. And that is the episode synopsis of episode 2, New York. Okay.
Take the lead, Scott.
Take it, Sam.
Yeah, see, all my notes are based again on it being a movie. So I didn't really, I haven't broken up episodic here. Let's see what I've got that.
Well, thank you for playing.
Sorry.
We have nice parting gifts for you, including the home version of our game. I did think this one ramped it up some. The fact that they were attacked at Wayne Manor, I thought was a significant point that they went with. I got a big kick out of Krager, just because he's such a weasel, and that's why I chose his name for me in this particular discussion. It was, we talked about Shayera and her betrayal in the previous episode, so now she's showing truly how she's torn between them and how she ultimately decides to back the league and gives them a warning as to what's going on. But, just the same, they can't totally trust her at this point. So, again, I think there's a lot of emotions and motivations that are more sophisticated than you would normally see in an animated series at this point. So, again, high marks as far as I'm concerned for the writing. This series in general, I really enjoyed what they were willing to do on it. And then even more so as we went into Unlimited, like you were talking about before. But I thought going on, if I remember right, basically just about every episode or every story in the two seasons that they did this show were multiple part stories. I think the only one I can remember off the top of my head that was not was Comfort and Joy. I think all the other ones were like two parters. So, they were giving you more in the way of development of these stories than you would normally get in an animated series. I think to build on what you were saying before, as I was watching this for the sake of talking about it today, I kept thinking, boy, they could do this live action and it would be awesome. They would hardly have to change the script at all. So with that thought in mind, I can't rave about this enough, how much I enjoyed what they did here.
Yeah, I agree with you. This really amps it up. It has a strong opening, I think, where it tells you right off the bat the whole planet is, they make specific references to NATO and the Russians and the Chinese. And, everybody's in the same boat. I like to, in my headcanon, say that opening scene is NORAD. And then you have General Wells on the horn with NATO. And this is where, I guess, the art and the writers weren't on the same page, because there's clearly a woman in the group. And he's like, gentlemen, everything is down. My question is, why would they be feeding the Justice League prisoners Thanagarian food? You would think it would be more economical to feed the local prisoners local food than, waste your supplies on them.
Personally, I also thought it was like, if the whole plan, was to like destroy Earth, right? And they wanted this to go off without a hitch. Why wouldn't they just attempt to execute the Justice League? What was the point in keeping them alive besides like plot?
Well, I agree with you there, because they could have eliminated them just because they were a nuisance. Plan wasn't to destroy Earth. The plan was to use Earth as a base to destroy the Gondorians or whatever they were. And the fact that Earth was going to get destroyed in the process was just considered collateral damage. Their goal wasn't to destroy Earth. It was just that was a sacrifice they were willing to make. Along those lines, because they were willing to make that sacrifice, you would think they wouldn't mind eliminating the Justice League just to eliminate the potential roadblocks they'd have to them.
Right.
This is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe.
Yes.
They're
yes,
building a highway, and yep. we happen to be in the way.
That was one of my notes, is that that's the entire beginning of Hitchhiker's Guide, yeah.
You didn't see the plans? There's a scene there where they're escaping, and Superman's got one of the Thanagarian's hammers.
Yes.
Like, I'm thinking of him with Thor's hammer.
Yep. Yeah, that's one of my notes, too. Superman with Mjolnir. Yeah, I loved that. I thought that was awesome.
Did you find that the Thanagarian fighter craft, I don't know if you saw it, they're very similar to the Cylon Raiders in the remake of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
In fact, I find there's a lot of similarities between the Thanagarians and those Cylons, including they're constantly saying, by your command.
I do like, you know, the part where, like, they're all going undercover as civilians. And, you know, Wally West is just, like, mind blown that, like, Batman kind of called them all out on, like, who they really are. I've always liked that. And I guess, yeah, like, it does help with the timeline in, like, seeing that, like, Wonder Woman, like, she isn't, like, Diana yet. She doesn't really have, because I guess, you know, she doesn't really have her secret identity yet, you know?
Doesn't this blow Batman's identity?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Because, I mean, they know that they're Justice Leaguers, and he is a public figure as Bruce Wayne. So it wouldn't take a whole lot to figure out, okay, which Justice Leaguer is he? You know? So, yeah, I think you just meant to kind of gloss over that, you know, kind of ignore that. But yeah, it does seem like his secret identity would be blown.
See, I think that they'd no-prize it by saying, oh, he was just sheltering them. You know, he's very public-minded. He was fine with hiding them out in his basement. Something maybe along those lines.
Maybe.
You can go.
I really, really like Wonder Woman in this. Mm-hmm. I felt like for a change, she really got to showcase her powers and her strength level. And I like her attitude in this too. I mean, this sort of adventure really fits her because she's a warrior and she really gets to show that off in this, especially the escape scene.
Yeah.
I thought she was excellent during that whole thing.
This reminded me as well of the TV show V.
Yeah.
With the resistance and that kind of thing, with the folks starting to rise up. You know, and you wonder how long it would take, you know, the army to get in gear for a guerrilla campaign against these people. Though I'm kind of curious why guns don't work. You know, I get you could neutralize missiles and tanks and vehicles, but I'm pretty sure a gun fires no matter what, unless they're lasers.
Yeah, that's the thing, is are they just laser guns, though? Because remember, we might still be at that point where they can't use traditional guns on what is arguably a children's TV show. For some reason, laser guns are perfectly fine. But, yeah, so they might be laser guns and not, you know, projectile weapons.
That was always my complaint about Star Trek. If they carried regular guns, they wouldn't run into that problem.
Where did John get the camera from? So in the scene where...
That's a good point. Where did John get the camera from?
Yeah. Where they're about to be... Where it's Wally and John Stewart. They're going to try to board the train and the line gets to them. Suddenly, Clark Kent and John Jones in human disguise run up and Clark's doing the whole reporter thing. And John snaps their picture. But the scene immediately prior to that, he did not have a camera. So I was trying to find, like, okay, was there like a camera shop in the background or, you know, nothing? There was,
I mean, maybe, you know, he's he's a shapeshifter, so maybe he could shapeshift objects, like.
But into a working, functioning camera.
It's just one of those puzzles, man. It's one of
right. Those How did Batgirl know where the Batcave was, or even know about the Batcave?
That is true.
I like the line by Alfred where he says, "I've been with the Wayne family since Master Bruce was in diapers, and I kept hearing William Shatner saying, 'I've been out there saving the galaxy since your grandfather was in diapers.'"
Well, there's a line in Mask of the Phantasm where Bruce and Alfred have a little tiff. Bruce just gets upset with him because Alfred says something about Andrea, like, "You're going to see her," or something like that. And Bruce snaps at him and says, "You think you know everything about me, don't you?" And he goes, "Well," and Alfred says, "Well, I diapered your bottom. I bloody well ought to." So I thought, I almost thought it was like a callback to that. I thought that was kind of cool.
Could very well be. There's so many callbacks, I believe, and so many things put in here because they have other sci-fi references.
Yep.
Nothing would surprise me.
Yeah, Bruce Timm and his team were very big about doing stuff like that. You know, references to other sci-fi franchises, even references to like Marvel Comics, you know, because there's a team that gets assembled it must be in Unlimited, that is basically the Defenders. And I thought that was mm-hmm. pretty cool. So they were always doing stuff like
Aquaman,
that.
Aquaman, Dr. Fate, and Solomon Grundy.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon Grundy. I'm trying to think. I just thought, again, like, it's interesting how, like, it's clear that, like, in however long that the Thanagarians were here, and, like, it's clear that they are running, like, kind of like a martial law type of situation. There's no police. There's no one. You know? Like, wouldn't you think there would be at least police on the street? Like, or some sort of, like, National Guard situation going on. Like, it's clear, like, they are running a strict program. So why is that?
It's one of the things that I think they didn't develop quite enough is that, you know, Superman announces, "Oh, yeah, the government leaders have decided to, you know, to go along with your plan." And they declare martial law, and there's, like, no resistance on Earth.
Yeah,
and I understand that they can't physically combat these hawk people, but right. I can't think they just roll over and you know, let them rub their bellies like a trained dog.
Also, like, wouldn't you think the rest of the world is watching this happen? And like, in like real world, if this is happening in the U.S. and all of the allies are watching this happen, wouldn't they be like, "Oh my God, like, we either got to help them, or like, we got to like prepare that we're going to be next," or like some sort of situation like that. Like, that's just, these are 20 minute episodes. Like, you're not going
to. That's what the opening scene in the bunker is like saying, you know, they've neutralized everybody's weapons, us, the Russians, the Chinese, the NATO allies.
I'm thinking about like in Thor Ragnarok, when the Hulk just kind of like beats on Thor for a little while, and they cut to Loki and he says, "That's what it's like." And I'm thinking that's what the rest of the world is thinking about the United States.
Right.
But it's also, they seem to, in the beginning when they take over and they have those, I'm assuming they were leaders on the tour with Batman dressed as Alfred. Mm-hmm. It's like, once they say they've taken over, it's like, "You're beneath us," almost. Like they ignored the president, you know, as opposed to, "Oh, we're going to round them up." And then all of a sudden they shift gears and it's, okay, martial law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I just always thought that was interesting. Like, especially when, like, they're, like, asking civilians for, like, identification. Like, that's when, like, I think, like, oh, like, someone's got to be, like, thinking of doing something. Like, realistically, if you were, like, down south and, like, these people, like, rolled in and started, like, demanding your identification, you know, that wouldn't fly without, like...
Those would be the people who would have real guns.
Right.
They don't got to worry about some neutralization.
It's a good thing they could all read English for the ID.
I would have loved to see a scene with some Alabama redneck going, I wonder what them hawk people taste like. Let's fry up one of them hawk people.
Like, yeah.
Isn't Teresa one of those Alabama people?
I guess so. True. I wonder what them hawk people taste like.
How about them hawk people good eating?
Fried. They're good when they're fried. Everything's good when it's fried.
Kentucky Fried Hawk Man. There you go. The whole new chain.
When we were down in Alabama, we went to like a barbecue place that I don't think they would hesitate to cook up a hawk person. Tastes like chicken.
Everything tastes like chicken. Yeah, always thought that was interesting. All right, who wants to take over the next part? The last one.
Oh, you don't want to do another one?
Nope. Definitely not.
I'll take
part. I'll double it and give it to the next person.
As soon as Shiera returns from the mothership, Krager has her arrested. He plays the recording of her conversation with the League for Ro, revealing both her treachery and her affection for John. A heartbreaking Ro orders her locked up. He assaults Krager for the devastating evidence and then orders an attack on Wayne Manor. He wants her to admit it was a mistake, but she says he has changed. Krager leads a strike team to Wayne Manor to eliminate the League. Fully powered now, the League beats back the attack and takes several prisoners. Unfortunately, John is unable to figure out how to pilot Krager's ship, so he goes deeper into his mind to find out. However, Krager's mental defenses, manifesting in the form of hawks, attack John with such ferocity, the mental flame inside Krager gaining the information he sought while leaving Krager temporarily catatonic. Meanwhile, back at the mothership, Ro visits Shiera's cell, asking why she betrayed them and told the League about the bypass. She replies that she wanted to save lives, while Ro then says that he wanted to save the Thangarian race. Shiera replies that her love would have found a different solution, and Ro then says if she was talking about him or John. He then says that he could forgive her and make all this go away if she admits he's the one she loves. Shiera tells him to spare the earth and its people, but Ro refuses and walks away. Batman is in command of their strategy. Superman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern attack the command ship to shut down the force field, protecting the hyperspace generator. Batman, Flash, and John infiltrate the watchtower using the strike team shuttle, with John masquerading as Krager, and incapacitate the occupation force. With the watchtower taken back, Batman explains that he plans to take the watchtower out of orbit and use it as a missile to destroy the generator. The Leaguers load the unconscious Thangarians into the escape pods, but Batman sneaks out to launch the pod with Flash and John still inside, sparing them from his kamikaze mission. Batman explains that he has to guide the tower in manually in case it burns on re-entry, even if it means sacrificing himself. He bids his comrades farewell. While Superman and Wonder Woman battle the Thangarian fighters, Lantern breaks into the ship to reach the force field controls. Talak is waiting for him, determined not to let Batman succeed in his suicide mission, and also desiring revenge on Lantern for his stolen love. As Wonder Woman fights her way through another part of the ship, she passes Hawkgirl's cell. Though bitter, she releases Hawkgirl, who takes up a convenient nth metal mace from an unconscious soldier. With the generator complete, the Thangarians begin the activation to open the hyperspace gate. The watchtower travels down the atmosphere, piloted by Batman, having strapped himself into the seat. As the heat increases, the tower begins to break up. He checks in with Superman on how they're dealing with the shield, revealing his current location. On hearing this, Superman breaks off from the battle and flies to intercept it. In the control room, Lantern fights hard against Talak, but loses after Talak slices his ring in half, which seriously injures his hand and wrist, and is knocked out. Talak raises the battle axe for the kill, and Hawkgirl appears to do battle with her ex-fiancé, who beats her and renounces his love for her. Lantern regains consciousness and attacks Talak again, but is very weak from the previous fight. As Talak punches him, Lantern taunts him, and an enraged Talak swings his axe. Lantern dodges out of the way from the force field control he was standing in front of, and Talak inadvertently hits the shield surrounding it. In the resulting explosion, Talak is knocked out, and the shield drops, allowing Lantern to deactivate the force field with Shayera's help. Superman streaks after the watchtower as Batman, overcome by the heat and smoke, finally passes out. As the station is low enough inside the atmosphere, Superman breaks in and pulls Batman free just before it hits, destroying the generator. Superman and Batman share a smile, saluting each other's bravery. Aboard the ship, Lantern and Hawkgirl are confronted by more Thangarian soldiers. Wonder Woman arrives to help, but Talak orders his men to stand down. Their mission has failed, and further occupation of Earth is pointless. He tells Hawkgirl it will take years to rebuild. She notes that he should get started right away and leaves with the League. At Wayne Manor, Hawkgirl watches a news report with obvious heartache as her people have ended the occupation and are leaving the planet, thanks to the Justice League. She is waiting while the League debates whether to allow her to remain. Serving her some tea, Alfred tells her that regardless of what the others decide, the fact is her action saved Earth at great personal sacrifice, and he will always consider her a hero for that. She returns his smile with a small one of her own, finding some comfort in that. In the conference room, Flash and Wonder Woman are the strongest for and against votes. Wonder Woman votes against Hawkgirl, reminding everyone that she betrayed them and revealed their weaknesses. However, Flash votes to allow her to stay, pointing out Hawkgirl came through in the end, as she always has done, and was stuck in the ultimate no-win situation. John agrees with the Flash to allow her to stay, while mentioning they are all Hawkgirl has left. Superman feels for Hawkgirl, but reveals that after everything that's happened, he doesn't know if he could ever completely trust her again. Lantern is quiet while appearing upset. Batman speaks up, pointing out that they're arguing in circles and that it's time they voted. Hawkgirl is still waiting nervously until Alfred appears and tells Hawkgirl they want to see her. In the conference room, Superman is about to announce the League's decision, but Hawkgirl interrupts, deciding to resign from the League. As she goes, Flash stops her momentarily and hugs her warmly. John and Superman say that it is their duty to rebuild the League. Outside Wayne Manor, John shares a brief emotional moment with Hawkgirl before she leaves. She's not sure where, just as long as the weight of the world is not on her shoulders, with no secrets and no lies. On his question of her love, she one last time tells him that she does indeed love him. After she flies away, John tearfully and quietly replies that he loves her too. Cue the Lonely Man theme. So what'd you think of the resolution?
I like this. I like this a lot. My favorite quote of the whole thing was right after they see Batman's animation on the Bat computer showing the evil plan and everything. I think Batman says something like impressive something like that. And Superman says, yeah, I'm impressed. Let's go wreck it. I love that. I think that's awesome.
I thought that like at the end, like it's obviously I'm happy that they all came to the conclusion like, oh, like we can't have her back. Even though she was like, yeah, like I'm not going to like, I'm cool with you guys, like, not having me, like, I don't deserve it, so to say. But And it was, like, kind of refreshing that they were all, like, oh, like, we can't trust her anymore. Because that is, like, the most realistic thing. Like, with these types of shows sometimes, because it is a kid's show, you expect them to be like, oh, like, well, you know, maybe, like, she's changed and blah, blah, blah. But I like that at the end, they're like, no, like, we can't trust you anymore. Like, you're done. So that's always, like, refreshing to see.
Don't you think the Earth would have wanted to get their hands on her and put her on trial?
I think the Earth would want to get their hands on everyone. At that
point. You know, they couldn't get all the Hawks that left, but you're still here.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good point, yeah. You would think that there would be story potential to make her kind of the focal point of a rift between, like, say, like the people of the Earth or the governments of the Earth and the Justice League, if they wanted to go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're sheltering her from, you know, the wrath of the governments type of thing.
Yeah, and to me, it'd be totally, like, rational, you know what I mean? Yeah. We want her, and we're going to put her on trial for what went on.
Right. I noticed there's a moment during the fight where Green Lantern's eyes are still glowing after his ring has been destroyed. I'm sure that was just a continuity error, but I was proud of myself that I caught it, because it's one of those you got to go back and almost freeze frame through it. But as I was watching it, I just happened to catch it at the right, like, blink at the right time or something. And I was like, wait, were his eyes glowing? So I went back and checked. And yeah, for just a second, they were.
After his hand got hit with that axe, I don't know why he's not called Thumbs.
So I love the whole sequence with Batman riding the Watchtower down and all. I thought that was pretty cool, although he does seem to have a real death wish. Like, he has a whole.
It's always Batman. Thing. It's always Batman doing.
It's always Batman, yeah, because he does something similar in, Public Enemies, where he takes that Superman Batman rocket into space that blows up. But all right, so he's riding it down. The thing is, like, red hot. All the air and everything is being ionized around it. The thing is burning up. Superman flies in, rips the door off, scoops Batman up, and flies out. And I'm thinking, shouldn't Batman be incinerated the moment Superman takes him outside? Because now, in this series, I'm not sure if Superman's cape is indestructible or not, but at the very least, it seems like he should have, like, wrapped Batman up in his cape. Or done something to try to protect him, but he didn't. He just picked him up and just carried him out. It seems like the minute he left the protection of the inside of the Watchtower to go outside where the air is, you know, ionizing, that Batman should have just been reduced to atoms right there on the spot.
Oops.
You would think.
See, that whole sequence, though, with Batman sacrificing himself the way he was, reminded me very much of what would be done later in the first Avengers movie with Tony Stark kind of doing a similar sacrifice at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
As opposed to Slim Pickens riding a nuclear weapon. All he needed would be a cowboy hat.
I was impressed with the, and I guess it shouldn't be impressed, shouldn't be the right word, but I was surprised and I guess impressed in its own way, but it was definitely made it more adult, you know, like you were saying earlier, Scott, about kind of watching for young kids, with the brutality of the fight that Green Lantern was having, the physical fight.
Yeah.
I mean, he took a hell of a beating in that fight. Mm-hmm. And you know, with small kids, I don't know that would be appropriate for them to be watching that.
Right.
But, you know, I hate using the word adult because it almost sounds like we're talking about porn when you say, oh, it's an adult movie or something like that. So I prefer to use the term grown up. It was a grown up scene in this animated show as far as the level of battle that went on. It didn't feel quite as cartoony as you normally would.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It's like it went back to where it started. The first Superman cartoons from the 1940s, they had a lot of violence in it. You know, shooting real guns and beating on. And then we went to this arc where it became, you know, nobody hit anyone in the superhero show.
Right.
And this is almost kind of a return to somewhat of where we started.
Right. Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. My, honestly, my only real criticism of this entire thing, and I'm very curious what you three will think of this, is why not use Katar Hall? Why not have Hawkman be Hawkman? And this is talked about in one of the special features. I think it was, it was on the movie version. There's a featurette with Bruce Timm and some of the other creators where they do discuss their reasons to change up. What did they call the guy? I forget what the name was. It's one of those, what do you call it? Where they switch all the letters around.
Like an anagram.
An anagram of Katar Hall. So the big bad is an anagram, but they did not want to use Hawkman. And basically their reasoning was, or it may have actually come more from DC Comics than was they didn't want to sully the character. That basically DC said, no, you can't do that to Hawkman. And I'm thinking, is Hawkman some sacred thing? Because I've never considered him to be in the top tier guys, honestly. Now, I know there are people that probably do. I like Hawkman just fine in certain incarnations, but he's not one of the big guys. And I don't think he's such a sacred character that you couldn't do this, you know, that take with him or this version with him. So I think if that was the intent, they should have just run with it. It should have been Katar. And I don't know why it wasn't. How do you guys feel about that?
No, that's a good point you bring up. I mean, if Hawkman's so sacred, I mean, why isn't he in more, like, forms of media then? Like, come on. But, no, that's an interesting point you bring up.
My understanding is that they definitely wanted to use Carter Hall, and that DC said no. And I think the reason might be we might be looking to bring him in down the road, and we don't want to sully him for that reason, just because we have more stories we might want to tell with him, which they did.
I mean,
they brought him into Unlimited. Yes. They used to, what's his name? The Shadow, I can't even think of the villain. The
Shadow Thief.
The Hawkman villain. Shadow Thief. And they set up that whole reincarnation angle with actually they even included Jon Stewart in that reincarnation story that they did in Unlimited.
I don't remember any of that.
He was one of the people who was. Well, you see, now as you're going through these, it's going to give you something to watch.
Yeah.
But they definitely did bring him in for that reason. And it created a little bit of the love triangle kind of thing that went on.
You know the wiki page we're all reading off of? If you go at the bottom, there's like a bunch of little fun facts. And
I wasn't reading off anything. I was doing that off the top of my head.
He memorizes everything.
Oh gosh, I wish I could do that. But like it kinda pinpoints like little like fun facts that connects like episodes. I just thought that was interesting.
What are you gonna do? Throw a batarang at it? I found it very amusing when Flash just starts pushing buttons and blows the side off Wayne Manor.
Was this the first time that we saw Hawk Girl without her mask?
I think so.
I guess.
I think it is. I don't think we ever saw her without a mask. Because her most relaxed is comfort and joy.
Yeah.
And she never takes it off.
I guess maybe besides it, maybe in Unlimited. But in this, yeah, I would say.
Oh, that is addressed in the notes here. It says, although not explicitly stated, Hawkgirl also presumably learned of it, meaning Batman's secret identity, before this episode as well, due to her somehow knowing the location of and entering the Batcave.
Yeah.
There's almost something akin to, there was a couple of issues of JLA, the comic, where Batman's plans on how to take everyone down get stolen by somebody.
Something.
I think it's Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That was Tower of Babel.
Yeah, that was adapted into one of the movies. I forget which one. I just watched it not long ago. One of the DC animated movies, it was loosely adapted into that.
But in this, it's almost like either she got her hands on his plans or came up with her own plans how to take them all down. Because they have everybody's weakness.
Right.
Just as an aside, the Hawkman episode of JLU was in the third season. It's called Ancient History.
Is that what the one where they caught a hole almost seems like a bit of a kook at the beginning?
Yeah, because he's saying he's in love with her and that they were reincarnated and she has no memory of that.
Yeah, I remember this episode. They're kind of like an archaeologist.
Right.
Yes. Whatever. Yep. Yeah. Yes. That's the one. See, I'm not just making this stuff up. All right, anybody got any more notes on this? Any more points? Because I'm hearing a lot of dead air.
No, I mean, all my notes are done.
I guess unless anybody has any more notes, maybe we could each give our final thoughts on this.
Sure.
So I'll jump in first and just say, overall, I really enjoyed this. The first time I saw it, I really enjoyed watching it for the sake of doing this today, which really means watching it with a critical eye, watching it to see if there's something about it that I don't like, watching it to see if there's things about it that I do like. And ultimately, I walked away much, much more on the positive side than the negative. There were very, very few things that I thought could be described as weaknesses, but there were a ton of things that I just thought were excellent in the way it was executed. And then I each season from this point forward, because they do the three seasons of Justice League Unlimited, and each one of them ends with like an exciting conclusion to the season, and really just, you know, ramps up the storylines and all. So I just feel this is really which the story that brought us there, and then it just kept going from that point forward. Three parts. So probably a total of about 70 minutes, 75 minutes total. Excellent movie. I wish I could see it in live action.
I agree with you 110%. This is so rewatchable. This is in the top three, I would say, episodes of the whole. Putting it together as one episode. Top three episodes of the whole thing. From Justice League to Justice League Unlimited. I also feel it's a love song to all these tropes from sci-fi going way back to the 50s, you know, starting this whole thing on the mall in Washington out of The Day the Earth Stood Still up until Independence Day and The Phantom Menace. To me, it's a great homage to classic sci-fi. There's also going to be so many threads that from this will wind their way into the future of Justice League Unlimited. This is, I feel, the starting point of the the movement within the universe, that there's that distrust for the superpowered heroes orbiting the Earth. And in particular, it's that callback for me that we'll see in the future where the Watchtower gets taken over and fires on Cadmus. And you get the flashing red phone with the president on the other end of the line. It's going to be a great ride to get there.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this, and this really lit a fire in me to want to step up my rewatch of Justice League, because, I mean, I've always loved it, but I'm struck by how much I've forgotten. I can't remember, honestly, the last time I did a complete rewatch, so it's well overdue. But, I mean, this was so much fun. And it's like, oh, man, I wish the movies were more like this. Mm-hmm. You know, just do this, you know? Yeah. This nailed it so, so well. Nailed all the characters so well. It's a great template, and I'm hoping that we're going to get more like this in live action. I feel like maybe we're starting that, you know, with the latest Superman, but I don't know. We'll see. They're also kind of doing their own thing, so who knows? The only other criticism I had on this, and this was more of a criticism of the series as opposed to just, you know, these three episodes, is they moved away from doing full symphonic scores when they started on this series. And that's a shame, because you can tell that the production level went down a notch with doing, you know, more like the using like synthesizers and that sort of thing. The score just isn't as good as it was for, like, say, Batman the Animated Series or Superman the Animated Series, where they were using, you know, full orchestral scores. And that's a shame. They put out a Justice League CD set a few years back. So I listened to the tracks on there that are from Starcrossed, and they're not bad, but yeah, it's that synthy stuff. And I just don't care for it as much. It's a shame it's not fully scored, but they did a pretty good job for, you know, for what they had to work with, you know, the equipment they had and that sort of thing. But yeah, that was the only other real criticism I had. Otherwise, yeah, this was excellent. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I mean, piggybacking off of what all of you said, like, it's such a good watch, such an easy watch, you know? Like, each episode in the arc just keeps you engaged. Like, you want to actually watch it. There's no really, like, low points in, like, the episodes where you're like, oh, like, I'm going to, like, take a peek at my phone or get a snack. Like, you're really locked in, like, the whole time. And, like, not just for, like, these episodes. Like, the show as a series, like, in general, is, like, so easy to just watch and lock into. And it always has been enjoyable for me. Like, I remember watching them, like, as a kid, like, just all the time. But, yeah, no, it just, I always like the ass. Like, one of my favorite episode was always the second one in this arc, just because, like, seeing them, like, as civilians, I just always loved that as a kid. And it's just, like, a deeper storyline, I feel like. It definitely is a more, like, grown-up storyline. And, like, watching it as, like, a grown-up now, like, you get to see that more. But, yeah, the show is great. The series is fabulous. There's really nothing, you really can't go wrong watching it, so.
Well, I guess that's about it. Anyone have any last words they want to throw out before we wrap this one up?
No. My last words on this, that Dave, as Teresa's father, you got to always act like, oh yeah, you're welcome to come back, whatever. I'm under no such obligation, and I want to let her know whenever you want to come back home with this, you are more than welcome.
Listen, have you guys ever watched? I'm gonna put you guys on something. You guys ever watched some, like, anime? I'm gonna put you guys on.
Listen. I watched what's the one where there's, like, the giant Walking Dead people.
Walking Dead. Like, are you talking Attack on Titan?
That's it. See, you got it. God. You picked it up.
Even it is from my so good, guys. Like, it's just so, like, it's so good. I watched that one. That was so good. Listen, Jujutsu Kaisen, guys, I'm putting you on. Season 3 just wrapped up. It's really good stuff. You can really nerd out to it. It's crazy good. There's, like, the power system you learn and the characters. Like, it's really good stuff. I think you guys should all look into it.
Where does this stream?
All the anime is on the streaming platform called Crunchyroll, but Jujutsu Kaisen and Attack on Titan are both currently on Hulu. I think only up to season 2 for Jujutsu Kaisen is on Hulu, but all of Attack on Titan is on Hulu. I think it's on Netflix too, actually. Jujutsu Kaisen's on Netflix, I know that. I think you guys should just give it a watch. It's really interesting. And the power system is really interesting, and the characters are good. And it's one of those shows where you just kind of actually want to keep watching. The music's good. The fight scenes are crazy. So I should give it a go. It'll be interesting. But anyways, that's really all I have to say. I'll definitely love to join again. This is always fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
So you're our bait to get young people to listen.
Yeah, I'm your bait. Yeah, I'm gonna tell everyone watch the podcast.
Tell all your young friends how cool and hip us old guys are.
Pretty cool, pretty hip.
We certainly nothing says hip more than watching Dave do a little dance in the street.
Yeah. Listen, if this is going to be given to me one day, this is going to be like the Empire. I'm going to have to find the target audience.
So we can one really day all of this will be yours.
Thank goodness. Yeah,
well, in the meanwhile, those of you who are interested in staying with us to see what will become of poor Teresa Pescarella, please come back next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.